Thanks, Rusty. It's always tough being scheduled instead of a break. So someone suggested to me that my job is to be the comic relief, which is really tough when they assign me a title of When Not If, Our Trends Showing Utah and the Country Heading Towards a Recession. It reminds me a quote from John Maynard Keynes talking about long-term versus short-term forecasts. And he said, in the long term, we're all dead. So, which is true. In the long term, there is a recession coming. The question is, when is it going to happen? And are we seeing, The question is, when is it coming and are we seeing signs of it right now? So what I wanted to do is kind of back up a little bit and look at what we saw happening a year ago. It was almost, I think it was exactly a year ago that we met for this meeting. So what were we looking at? We were looking at equity markets struggling. We were looking at the Fed aggressively talking about rate increases. We were right in the middle of a federal government shutdown. We were just in the early stages of a trade war with China, uncertainty over the USMCA, and uncertainty over Brexit. By the way, think about that one when we come to the end. And inflation seemed to be mounting. So we saw increased inflation facing our economy. So that was how we entered 2019. So how do things look now? Let's look at equity markets. So this is looking at the Dow Jones Industrial Average. And you can really see that negative impact when we look at the 2018 growth or change in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Big drop in December of 2018 coming into 2019. And so that's what really framed it. But then during 2019, we saw quite a reversal in our equity markets. For instance, now that we've closed out 2019, during last year, Dow Jones Industrial Average increased 23%. The S&P increased 29%. And the NASDAQ increased 35%. So it was actually a very good year for equity markets. So why did that happen? Why do we see that reversal? And it's been really interesting compared to what we expected last year to what we actually saw. So let's look at, So let's look at what we actually see happening. So in July of last year, our nation entered the longest economic expansion in our history. So we're now at 110 consecutive months of job growth in our country. So we continue to see strength in the job market. When we break it down, this is looking at job growth by month. And you can see that we have seen some slowing, going from about 223,000 jobs on average for 2018 down to about 180,000 jobs on average in 2019. And you can also, when you start to dig in a little bit more, you can see some of that slowing in the later stages of 2019. And we expected that slowing would continue. Then we got the big surprise last month of the jobs report for November. We were expecting 180,000 jobs to be created. We got 366,000 jobs. Part of that is the ending of the GM strike, but we also saw a lot of weakness with Census Bureau increasing hiring and also holiday hiring of temporary workers. So the job market held up throughout, throughout 2019 at the national level. The unemployment rate also hit a historic low. The unemployment rate now is the lowest it's been since December of 1969. Extremely low unemployment in our nation. One of the things I want to point out, though, look really closely. If you look at the vertical shaded areas, those represent recessions. You notice anything interesting about that unemployment rate related to recessions? Essentially, what happens is when you hit a low in unemployment and it starts to go back up, it usually coincides with a recession. So what we know is that there is a relationship between unemployment going up after a low and recessions. What we don't know, we also know that this is the lowest rate we've seen since December of 1969. What we don't know is, are we at the bottom? We could continue to go even lower, and so and that's certainly possible, or we could just kind of stick around at this very low rate for a long time. But once we start to see signs that unemployment rate is going back up again, that could be an early sign that a recession is coming. When we look at more broadly at our unemployment rate, and sorry, it's a little bit washed out, but we're looking at African-American unemployment and also Hispanic unemployment, also at historic lows. So we're seeing the breadth of the benefits of the economic expansion being felt widely throughout different groups in our economy. Our labor force participation rate, this is essentially saying, of the total working age population, how many people are working or looking for a job? That's your labor force participation. We're now at the highest level since 2013. So we're doing a good job of pulling people off the sidelines and back into the labor force. However, we're nowhere near where we were in 2000. We saw a drop coming out of the 2002 recession, little recovery, and then a big drop coming out of the 2008-2009 recession. And I don't know that we can return back to where we were in 2000. The reason for that is demographic. So every single day in America, we have 10,000 baby boomers retiring. And that will continue for the next 10 years. So we've got this huge outflow of boomers leaving the labor force. They call it the silver tsunami. And it's kind of washing over the country and washing people out to their cruise ships. But it's a dynamic that we're having to face, and it makes it really difficult for employers. And you can see this. So what we're looking at is unemployed workers per job opening. Coming out of the recession, we had over 6 workers for every job opening. Now it's less than 1. So those labor shortages are becoming more and more pronounced, and it's becoming more and more difficult to find qualified workers for those job openings. And those shortages are even more pronounced in some of our fast-growing areas like tech or some of our new industries like the gig economy. In economics, we have a kind of a term for this. We call it the Phillips curve. And what it means, so if you just think about this, think about your supply and demand. You know, we're talking about supply of labor and demand of labor. If you've got a low supply of labor and a high demand for labor, what should happen to wages? They go up, right? So the Fed is looking at all this. So let's jump back a year ago. The Fed is looking at all this data. And they said, okay, we've got a tightening labor market, we've got high demand for labor, we've got consistent job growth, we're going to see big increases in wages, and if wages go up dramatically, then you all know businesses have slim profit margins. If you have your labor costs go up, you have to increase your prices. So if wages go up, then inflation goes up. If inflation goes up, remember the Fed has what they call a dual mandate. They're mandated by Congress to focus on full employment and low and stable inflation. Specifically, their target is 2%. So if you've got these wage pressures that turn into inflationary pressures, the Fed has to increase interest rates. So this is why the Fed said in December of last year, remember in 2018, the Fed raised rates 4 times. And then they said a year ago, we will raise rates 3 more times in 2019. So what actually happened? And you can see that. So if you look at this run-up right here, is what the Fed was looking at. They're looking at a spike in wages, and they're getting really nervous. And so that's why they started aggressively raising rates and signaling more rates, more rate increases into 2019. But then what happened right here, that was the February report of 2019, the Phillips curve broke. So one of our economic principles essentially is no longer happening. So even with a continuing tightening labor market, even with the labor force participation rate being relatively low compared to history, we've seen wage growth essentially slowing. It just doesn't make any sense. Janet Yellen has called this the biggest mystery in economics right now. How is it that a tight labor market can not create higher wage growth? And then when we jump forward to inflation, you see the same trend. You see this spiking going up into 2018, and then it kind of drops off. And now we are actually below the Fed's target. The Fed's target is 2%, and inflation is only at 1.4%. There's a lot of theories about why this is happening, but we're not exactly sure. I mean, it could be the gig economy. It could be artificial intelligence. It could be international trade has made the world flat, and we have many more alternatives. But what we do know, though, is that this traditional relationship between wages and employment and inflation has broken down, at least for now. Now, when we look more broadly at inflation, there was a conference of economists, which it makes me so excited. But that just was held last weekend, and there is an ongoing debate about whether the Fed should be changing their inflation target. Is 2% now too high of a target? And you can see that. So what we're looking at here is historical inflation back to 1960. You can see the very high points in the 70s and 80s, but we've essentially gotten locked into a much lower level of inflation in our country. In fact, in the last few years, in the last decade, we've seen 2 years where we saw deflation in 2010 and briefly in 2015. So our inflationary pressures appear to be more downward than upward in our current economy. Looking at our gross domestic product, again, there was an expectation in 2019 that we would see GDP dropping very dramatically, but it actually held up really well. The latest data we have for the third quarter of 2019 was 2.1% growth in GDP. And we expect that it will continue to slow. The consensus forecast is that GDP will grow about 1.5 to 1.8% in 2020. So again, not going negative, but continuing to see that slowing. And we're seeing signs. We continue to see signs that we are in the late stages of our economic cycle. But the immediate risks that we saw a year ago have kind of dropped off. However, I want to dig into these specifics. If you remember back to your college economy, Econ 101, right? GDP is C plus I plus G plus net X, right? So let's talk about what we're talking about: consumption, investment, government, and exports. So let's break it down. And what we see here, we're comparing consumer spending to business spending. And what it shows very clearly, especially when you look on the right, consumer spending is holding up. The consumer still feels good, and consumers continue to spend. In fact, we're just starting to get the data from the holiday spending season, and it looked very good for a lot of retailers. However, look at business spending. We are already in a contraction in business spending. So business investment has pulled back, and there's a lot of uncertainty in the business sector in our country. So as long as the consumer continues to feel good, we'll be okay. But if that weakness in business spending starts to turn into weakness in consumer spending, maybe if those wage increases continue to soften, or if businesses start to hold off on hiring more people, then that could turn into much broader weakness in the overall economy. And then kind of breaking it down, so the Institute of Supply Management has a monthly survey of how different sectors are operating. So what we're looking at is the service sector versus the manufacturing sector. So what we see here, just in terms of reference, of the 50, the line right in the middle, if it's above 50, it indicates that they're expanding. Below 50, it indicates that they're contracting. So service sector continues to be expanding, coming in at 53.9%. However, the manufacturing sector is contracting and has been contracting since about September, dropping down now to about 47.2%. So again, we see that similar weakness where manufacturing, those areas specifically tied to international trade, continue to see weakness and continue to contract. In fact, you'll notice that this line is moving downwards. So not only is it contracting, but it's contracting by a greater degree than we were a few months ago. Now, looking at, since we're a room full of tax and economic nerds, I have to talk about the yield curve. So coming, if you remember, the yield curve is just measuring the return on government bond or on bonds with different rates of maturity. So on the far left, you're looking at a month of maturity. On the far right, you're looking at 30 years. And you should have that yield curve sloping up because there's greater risk for greater time horizons. But what we started to see a year ago when we met was we started to see that yield curve inverting. And the most dramatic period was the one I'm showing, which is June 7th of last year. We saw a dramatic inversion in the yield curve. It's essentially a sign that the economy is broken, that the markets are broken, where you're actually paying more interest for shorter term bonds. Just doesn't make any sense. But the reason for that, and if you look at it, if you break it down by the left-hand side and the right-hand side, the Fed controls the short-term interest rates. The Fed doesn't control all rates. They only control the left side of the yield curve. So the Fed was keeping rates abnormally high, but the markets saw weakness in the economy, and so they were driving down the longer-term rates. And so that's how we turned into that inverted yield curve. And this was right about the turning point for the economy. An inverted yield curve often is an early sign that the economy is heading into recession. So this was sending huge warning signs throughout the market, throughout the economy. Now, how does it look today? This is the yield curve as of last week. The top one is a year ago, where we were just entering the inversion. Right now, we've essentially fixed it. We're essentially out of the inversion. There's a slight inversion between 1 month and 1 year, but we're mostly upward sloping now, and we've mostly come out of the woods. Why is that? Again, look at that left side of the yield curve. That's the Fed dropping interest rates. So remember, the Fed said they were going to raise rates, or they raised rates four times in 2018, and they said they would raise them three more times in 2019. After they saw that inverted yield curve in June, they completely reversed course. Instead of raising rates three times in 2019, they dropped rates three times in 2019. This really has been kind of like a roller coaster. We see this, we saw a little bit of trouble coming into 2019. It got really bad, and then the Fed got aggressive in addressing it. I was surprised to see the Fed reverse course so dramatically and so quickly. Now, part of it was because they were getting beaten over the head by President Trump. If you remember his tweet saying that, the Fed's my enemy and Jerome Powell's crazy, and so it worked. So the Fed completely reversed course and cut rates. Now, what do we see happening for next year? Again, this is like, I only show this slide to, groups of nerds. Has anyone ever heard of the Fed's dot plot? Oh, come on. One person only, David? Okay, well, this is the Fed's dot plot. This is the slide. It's so cool. So each one of those dots represents a vote of a member of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors, the Federal Open Market Committee. So it's essentially them saying, where do we think it would be appropriate to have the federal funds rate going forward? So it gives you an indication of where the Fed is inclined to go. Of course, they do change their minds from time to time, which is why it doesn't always happen. So this is where the Fed expected rates to be in 2019. Of course, it's going to be, because this is from December. Of course, it's going to be the same as where it was because it's looking backward. But what do they see for 2019? This is essentially saying, and it's showing that the Fed is now on hold. Jerome Powell has indicated this, has confirmed this, and also the dot plot shows that too. So the Fed is essentially stepping back and saying, we've done what we're going to do. We will not increase or decrease rates in 2019. But they do expect that the economy will improve after that rather than going into a recession. So they think that there will be the ability to raise rates into 2021 and beyond. So just quickly, one of the things I am worried about, though, because remember, the title of this is When, Not If. So when we go in the next recession, one of the things I'm really worried about is the amount of debt in our country. So what we're showing here is the big ones that I want to show you. So we've got credit card debt, we've got auto loan debt, and student loan debt. Credit card debt actually isn't too bad right now. Neither is mortgage debt. They're roughly the same as they were before the Great Recession. However, auto loan debt up 61%, student loan debt up 173%. And also listen to this, delinquencies. This is what really gets me nervous. So right now, 1% of mortgage debt is delinquent. However, 5% of auto loan debt is delinquent. Student loan debt, 11% right now is delinquent. And so when we go into the next recession, this could really exacerbate that and could cause some real problems for individuals. Remember, it's very difficult to dismiss student loan debt in bankruptcy. So people will be saddled with all this new debt and be stuck with it when we're heading into the next recession, which could produce some really difficult situations, similar to the mortgage crisis that we saw 10 years ago. Now, looking at Utah, things continue to look really good in the state. We just got new data on population last week. Utah is now the second fastest growing state in the country. We're actually in a three-way tie with Nevada, Arizona, and Utah, and then Idaho is the number one fastest growing state in the country once again. But you see that the fastest growing area is right around us in the Intermountain West. When we look at our components of change, our natural increase in migration are down just a little bit from last year, but still coming in really strong. Total population growth in Utah topped 50,000. Total population topped 3.2 million people last year. So we continue to see a lot of strength in our population growth. Why is that? Our employment growth is now the highest in the country. We've been top 10 for a long time, but again last month we're the highest. And not only that, Utah's employment growth is twice the national average. And also, we are 50 basis points higher than the next closest state. We're at 3.2%. I believe it's Idaho is number two at 2.7%. Or is that what it says? I can't even read that. So we're very strong right now, and we continue to see growth in the state. Looking at our unemployment, a year ago we were about, I believe we were about seventh lowest unemployment rate in the country. We're now second lowest. The only state with lower unemployment than Utah is Vermont. But again, low unemployment is a double-edged sword. We're seeing that pressure on our labor markets, and we're seeing those labor shortages happening. The last time we saw unemployment this low was right before, again, remember where it turns course, where it goes from down to up, was right before the Great Recession. And it only stayed at that 2.4% for about a month or two. So what we're going to be watching really closely is this 2.4% that we just entered a new low where we're kind of stick there, or will we continue to drop? It's conceivable that we could continue to drop, but we are seeing extremely low labor markets are extremely tight labor markets throughout the state. However, Utah, and this is brand new data too, we just got from the Census Bureau, Utah now has the third lowest poverty rate in the country. Only New Hampshire and Hawaii have lower poverty than the state of Utah, and much lower than some of our states in the region. Look at New Mexico, much higher poverty. Mississippi, Louisiana, all having high double-digit poverty, and Utah sees very low poverty, which means that the benefits of our economic our strong economy is being felt widely throughout the population. So kind of putting it together, the pros that I see, again, we've got strong job growth throughout the country and in the state of Utah. Consumer spending is holding up, the consumer still feels good and continues to be engaging with the economy. And then we've got the Fed kind of getting it. They say often recessions are created by policy mistakes. And I think the Fed recognized that. They recognized that they were being too aggressive. They reversed course, and now they're essentially standing back. So that really helps us. Our cons or our struggles right now really are, again, I'm going to go back to that first slide, it's that uncertainty. We've got uncertainty with, especially now with Iran, that just created a new kind of uncertainty. But also, the Chinese trade deal isn't resolved, Brexit isn't resolved, USMCA isn't resolved yet, and then the big unresolved, we've got a presidential election this fall. So there's still a high level of uncertainty, and that, if any of those areas start to crumble, it could push us a lot weaker. But right now, if and then on the other side, if we can resolve some of these issues, if we can resolve the USMCA and the Chinese trade deal and Brexit, it could actually continue to strengthen our economy. And we could have, this could be an example of a repeat of the reversal that we saw in the mid-1990s, where we were heading into a recession, we aggressively addressed it, and we were able to grow for a few more years. And so that's kind of what the crystal ball is saying as of today. So thanks so much.